The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
This is that day. This is November 11th. And it is significant. 100 years ago, we had the World War One, the end of World War One.
That's my father speaking last night at the Columbus, Ohio campaign, speaking, as he said there, on the 100-year anniversary of the armistice that brought the First World War, the Great War, to an end. It is significant, as he stressed last evening, and his traveling party then was Johnny on the spot in getting that segment posted on the Trumpet.com website. If you haven't seen that, go to the Trumpet.com today. I think the video is about 26 minutes. It's the first part of his public address last evening in Columbus, and he's talking about all of the ceremonies yesterday. There was one in Paris. There was one in London. President Trump attended the one in Paris before then heading to a U.S. cemetery just outside of Paris to give a speech there. But what a significant event, and I think the significance here, too, is that God worked out the timing in all of this, that my father, as it happens, just was there in Columbus to speak, rearranging a few things in his notes, no doubt, as he saw some of the news play out throughout the day yesterday. The Associated Press said, in remembering World War One, the world warned of resurging demons, old demons. And, of course, the French president, Emmanuel Macron, was in the spotlight yesterday as he talked about the dangers of nationalism. Who could he be referring to? This piece at the Associated Press, it says, world leaders with the power to make war but a duty to preserve peace solemnly marked the end of World War I's slaughter 100 years ago at Commemoration Sunday that drove home the message never again, but also exposed the globe's new political fault lines. So they got this right. The world is certainly more divided than it has been in many decades. It says, as Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, and dozens of other heads of state and government listened in silence, French President Emmanuel Macron used the occasion, as its host, to sound a powerful and sobering warning about the fragility of peace and the dangers of nationalism and of nations that put themselves first above the collective good. And so here comes the globalist. I guess he would refer to himself as that. Here comes the globalist, decrying the evils of nationalism, of putting your nation first. And of course, it wasn't that long ago when the United States president proudly declared himself to be a nationalist.
You know, they have a word. It sort of became old-fashioned. It's called a nationalist. And I say, really, we're not supposed to use that word. You know what I am? I'm a nationalist, okay? I'm a nationalist.
And, of course, President Trump got a lot of criticism for that, even at home, even at in the United States. And he has since explained that by that he means an American-first nationalist. He's also made statements recently about how much he loves the world and he wants to see the world at peace. But he has American interests first. Well, this is what, and you'll hear the translator here, but this is what the French President Emmanuel Macron said yesterday during the centenary celebration or memorial, I guess you should say. Clip three.
Patriotism is the exact opposite of nationalism. Nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism by saying, our interests first, who cares about the others? We erase what a nation holds dearest, what gives it life, what makes it great, and what is essential, its moral values.
So nationalism, as he says there, it betrays. It's a betrayal of patriotism, some strong rebuke for the U.S. president, who is sitting right there on the front row. As the New York Times said, stone-faced and unmoved. But sitting there on the front row and afterwards tweeting out that it was a beautiful ceremony. He didn't say anything negative in return during the speech that he gave at the U.S. Cemetery. But that was the French president offering some strong rebuke for the U.S. president to come out and say he's a nationalist. Patriotism is the exact opposite of nationalism, Macron said. He was interviewed later on in the evening. CNN had this interview where he explained further about his position and where he stands, and he did try to, well, I don't know if he walked it back at all. He just said that he and President Trump still work together, but that they have some pretty strong differences as well. This is what he said on CNN, clip 4.
I'm not a nationalist, which is very different for me from being a patriot. I do defend my people, I do defend my country, I do believe that we have a strong identity, but I'm a strong believer in cooperation between the different peoples. And I'm a strong believer of the fact that this cooperation is good for everybody. Where the nationalists are sometimes much more based on a unilateral approach and the law of the strongest, which is not my case.
That last bit there, in case you didn't understand it, he talked about the nationalist being someone who bases his policy more on a unilateral approach and the law of the strongest, which is not my case. I mean, that's not the way that I think. And just last week, as we covered on this program, this same president, French President Emmanuel Macron, was calling for a real European army. We need an army. And if you remember, I said this last week, the Times here in the UK, it called that the strongest language yet on the need for an independent defense force in Europe. We will not protect the Europeans unless we decide to have a true European army. And remember what he went on to say? Remember who he said they needed to be protected from? China, Russia, and the United States. Europe needs to be protected from the United States. President Trump, following that statement, I think it was maybe last Tuesday, less than a week ago, but President Trump tweeted, President Macron of France has just suggested that Europe build its own military in order to protect itself from the U.S. Very insulting. That's just days away from this centenary memorial. 100 years since the armistice following World War I. What a time to be talking about needing protection from the United States of all nations. Coming into this memorial service, Armistice Day, Veterans Day, what a time to be warning the world about Donald Trump and nationalism, to be warning the world about America. As I went through last week, that piece by Victor Davis Hanson, early on in 1918, it looked like Germany and Austria-Hungary, it looked like they were going to win the war. Russia had already given up in late 1917. And so all these German and Austrian troops were redeploying to the Western Front. They were about to put the finishing touches on an overwhelming victory. And then at the last, the United States entered the war in mid-1917, I think it was. But it wasn't for many months until they could finally send a lot of troops. And it was the summer of 1918 that hordes of American soldiers started arriving in France. That's why we have so many cemeteries in France, because of how many American soldiers died defending the French on French soil. This is the time that Emmanuel Macron sees fit to warn the world about the United States of America. It's American nationalism that he's most concerned about. That's pretty incredible. And my father, he talked about that last night, reminding those trumpet readers of this history from the past, just the past 100 years, the past century. Listen to what my father said in Columbus, clip 5.
We helped France mightily in World War I, and really the Brits and the Americans delivered them, for the most part, from captivity in World War II.
Delivered them from captivity twice. Twice. Twice in the past 100 years. And because of that, we've got cemeteries all over France, as he said last night. Here's clip 7.
They have cemeteries for American soldiers dying in France to free the French. Now, that's pretty insulting. It's more than that when you start saying that to somebody who's literally given many of their soldiers' lives to save Europe and to save France.
It is pretty insulting. I think the president was right to tweet that out. Very insulting, as he said on Twitter last week. The president, of course, was at one of those U.S. cemeteries not long after yesterday's ceremony. And here's just a bit from his speech, clip 13.
On this day in the year 1918, church bells rang, families embraced, and celebrations, as you know, filled the streets like never before in towns throughout Europe and the United States. But victory had come at a terrible cost. Among the Allied forces, more than 1 million French soldiers and 116,000 American service members had been killed by the war's end. Millions more were wounded. Countless would come home bearing the lasting scars of trench warfare and the grisly horrors of chemical weapons. During the final battle of the war, over 26,000 Americans lost their lives, and more than 95,000 were wounded. It was the single deadliest battle in United States history. Think of that. 26,000 Americans lost their lives in a battle. Here on the revered grounds of Suresnes American Cemetery lie more than 1,500 U.S. service members who made the ultimate sacrifice in the First World War.
And there were many more to follow in World War II, as you can see if you visit the cemetery at Normandy. The ultimate sacrifice, that last battle, 26,000 Americans lost their lives in France. 95,000 wounded. And last week, you had the French president calling for a real European army for protection against the United States of America. Not protection from Germany. Twice this century, or the past century, the past 100 years, a little over now, I guess, France has had its borders overrun by German troops. Not American troops. Americans showed up to fight for France. You know what else is interesting regarding last week? Again, the lead up to this centenary memorial in Paris yesterday is that the French president, Macron, he was with a group of reporters. I think this was right around the same time when he came out with that statement regarding the European army. And he was talking about the forthcoming ceremony where all these world leaders would gather. And he talked about this great soldier, this great French soldier. He called him great. Marshal Philippe Pétain, the hero of Verdun from World War I. I think that was 1916. And there's historians today that really argue over whether or not he deserves credit for winning that battle, if you can even call it a victory. But he said about Pétain, he's a great soldier. It's legitimate that we pay homage to the marshals who led the army to victory. And he was a great soldier. This is the reality, he said about Pétain. So you look back at the history of these past 100 years, Pétain, as World War I came to an end, he was the preeminent French general, and he was still around when World War II came along. And you'll recall, if you've read the history books, that in May of 1940, the Germans were just overrunning France. And the French government called upon this same general. I think he was now in his 70s or 80s. But they call upon Philippe Pétain to save them. To save them. And Pétain gets in there. He's convinced that the war could not be won. And so he tries to surrender. He tries to secure the best possible terms of surrender with Germany. Churchill, of course, was urging him to fight. Churchill said, look, we can fuse Britain and France together as one. And Pétain replied by saying, why should France fuse with a corpse? Well, they're going to overrun you as well. That was his message to Britain. That was his message to Churchill. Guess which British politician Pétain really did like and admire there in the late 1930s? Neville Chamberlain, of course. He didn't trust Churchill and some of the conservatives, but he loved Chamberlain. Historian David Price Jones wrote, there was no other occupied country during the Second World War which contributed more to the initial efficiency of Nazi rule in Europe than France. They capitulated within weeks and then actually helped the Nazis. There was the smaller French resistance movement. But the Vichy group, headed up by Pétain, they were Nazi collaborators. That's the history. And Macron, Emmanuel Macron, last week, he called Pétain a great soldier, and he said it's legitimate that we pay homage to the marshals who led the army to victory. I suppose he's referring to World War I, but still. Andrew Roberts, the British historian, he wrote that France participated enthusiastically. This is Vichy France, under the leadership of Pétain. They participated enthusiastically in sending no French Jews to the death camps, principally Auschwitz, in a way that the Germans simply did not have the manpower or local knowledge to achieve. Isn't that wonderful? They helped the Germans slaughter the Jews. And France was, they were overrun so easily that the new German masters only needed 30,000 troops to occupy France, all of France. They just surrendered. Go ahead, take us over, and we'll collaborate. Here again, Andrew Roberts, he says, it was Philippe Pétain himself who made Vichy respectable. The most controversial Frenchman of the 20th century, he always despised politicians, and it was his tragedy, and that of France, that he decided to become one himself in 1940. He became a politician himself in 1940, although it was always going to be difficult keeping Vichy neutral between the Axis and Allied powers. Pétain, he deferred to the Nazis much more than he needed to, writing groveling letters to Hitler about the new hope that the Wehrmacht's victories offered for the new Europe. He was a collaborator. There were more French who, Richard Palmer brought this out this morning, there were more French who fought for the Axis powers in World War II than for the Allies. Now, you look back at the longer view of history. France, of course, has had a history with the Holy Roman Empire. It's had a history with the Catholic Church. So in one sense, this was not like, you know, a large departure from the historical norm. But still, as my father brought out last night, France is Reuben. Brothers. Joseph and Reuben, brothers. Brothers together with Ephraim and Manasseh. And as far as the most recent history, the last century, it was Reuben's brothers, Ephraim, Manasseh, that rescued France from tyranny, from captivity, from slavery. They needed Britain's help. They needed America's help in both of those world wars. Paul Johnson said, where France chose Pétain and quietism, Britain chose Churchill and heroism. Britain stood up to the Nazi menace and fought. France didn't do that. And because of that, there's a lot of British blood. There's a lot of American blood in French soil to this day. What an individual to hold up and to extol. Just days before, he would then slam the President of the United States. The American Spectator, it says, it was perfectly stupid of French President Emmanuel Macron to say nice things about Marshal Philippe Pétain as commemorative ceremonies were getting underway to mark Armistice Day. General Pétain, as he then was, commanded French forces during the year-long Battle of Verdun in 1916, World War I. About 1 million men died, with neither side, French or German, gaining any ground. It says Macron could have put in a word for the men who lived in trenches with rats and lice and the fear of officers who sent them over the top knowing they would not return, or who ordered them shot for what they called mutiny, a reluctance to commit suicide. Instead, Macron praised the, quote, great soldier, close quote, who 20 years later surrendered France to the Germans and commenced voluntarily and without prodding the murder of about a third of France's Jews while launching a civil war against the patriots who wanted to continue the fight against Nazism. He led the fight against those Frenchmen who wanted to fight Nazism. This is who the current French president sees as a hero. It says, by bringing up the Euro Army issue as the president was landing, this is speaking of the events last week again, we need a true European army. Mr. Macron was creating an international row where state visits are concerned. When you invite someone, you show him proper courtesy and respect. Mr. Macron's way of greeting his guest was to announce Europe needs its own army because of threats from China, Russia, and the United States of America. It was a direct affront by a man who seems incapable of indicating where the real threats of his country, the real threats to his country, are coming from. That's what we see. It's sweeping across Europe. They see the threat. They see the threat as coming from the United States. Certainly not from Germany. How could this have happened in just 100 years' time? How could the thinking, the views of so many be so completely different, opposite of what they were just 60, 70 years ago, 100 years ago? Foreignpolicy.com, it says, in 1940, after the Nazis had broken the French armed forces and entered Paris, Pétain took the helm of the French government and requested an armistice initially, he received massive support from the population, which saw him as a shield protecting the country from the sort of brutality the Nazis were visiting on Poland. They didn't want to be destroyed like Poland. So they wanted someone in there who would capitulate, and who would capitulate fast, and who would secure some, at least some decent terms of surrender. Foreign policy says Pétain served France very badly between 1940 and 1944. He presided over the collaborationist Vichy state, which actively aided the German war effort and attempted to impose an authoritarian, ultra-conservative social order on the country. On its own initiative, Vichy hunted down members of the resistance, passed anti-Semitic legislation, and most notoriously, rounded up approximately 76,000 Jews for deportation to Nazi camps, the great majority of whom were killed. You see, after Pittsburgh a few weeks ago, I thought we were supposed to be especially sensitive to Jew hatred, to violence aimed at Jews. And here is this history being resurrected and praised by the French president, even as he denounces the American president for saying America first. Foreign policy says since the end of World War II, no French leader has wanted to be associated with Pétain. But this week, President Emmanuel Macron managed in a remarkable political blunder to start a controversy over Pétain's memory. And then it goes on to say what he said before reporters last week. He's a great soldier. And we need to praise him and his efforts at the upcoming ceremony as well. Well, I guess his advisors got to him in the days that followed, and nothing was said that I know of yesterday regarding Pétain. But what a week. What a week in the midst of all of this. And oh, by the way, you have a German government in crisis. You have the rise of nationalism. Yes, nationalism in Germany. That's right next door to France. And you come away from this past week, you come away from yesterday, and it's all across the international media. It's in the French papers. It's in the British papers. It's in the New York Times this morning. Once again, surprise, surprise, Donald Trump is the bad guy. He's the nationalist. He's disrupting the world order. And in some ways he is. But look, it was American-style nationalist, or nationalism. It was America-first thinking during World War I and World War II that prevented America from getting involved. Those were two world wars where America was reluctant to get involved. They were reluctant to send their boys across the Atlantic. But as we know, they finally did. And in both of those wars, they fought for freedom. They fought for Britain. They fought for France. They fought for their brothers. They fought against the forces of tyranny. It's not American-style nationalism that Europe needs to worry about. It's the German nationalism. It's the Germany-first nationalism that more leaders should be warning about. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
I can remember when I came in this church, and that was over 50 years ago, that we used to talk about, well, France or Reuben. You can prove that it is Reuben of the Bible. That's the ancient name of France. And we would talk about, well, how France is going to betray us today in these modern times the way they did ancient, or the way Reuben did anciently, the way he betrayed Joseph.
That's my father from the Columbus campaign last night. So we've got the video posted at thetrumpet.com already. 25, 26 minutes. You can go to the Trumpet website today and catch that opening from his first lecture in Columbus. Of course, he's there again tonight for part two, for the second day of that two-day campaign. So hopefully we can report back to you tomorrow on the success of that ongoing campaign in Columbus right now. But there he is talking about how that for decades... And Mr. Armstrong brings out some of this history, Herbert Armstrong in the United States and Britain in prophecy, the identity of these nations, France as Reuben in the Bible, in the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis, and of course, Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh, our peoples today, America and Britain. Let me read to you 1 Chronicles 5, verses 1 and 2. It says, "Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel... For he was the firstborn, but forasmuch as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel." It says, "And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright." The Revised Standard Version says, "So that he," speaking of Reuben, "is not enrolled in the genealogy according to birthright." The birthright was to be Joseph's. I mean, Reuben was the firstborn, and Reuben would have gotten the birthright blessings were it not for defiling, as it says there in that passage, his father's bed, sleeping with one of his father's concubines. So you've got the birthright going to Joseph. Legally, it belonged to Reuben, but he lost it, just like Esau lost his birthright. Joseph was born, if you know some of the history, Genesis 37 recounts this. He was born in strife. He grew up in a family that was divided. And again, a lot of that started because of the sins of his father Jacob, mistakes that were made early on. And others factored into it too. Then you look at Reuben's great sin, as I just mentioned, and he lost the birthright. And the fact that Jacob played favorites with his sons, he loved Rachel more, the Bible says, more than Leah. He loved Joseph more than the other sons. And so all of that bred a lot of competition and strife within the family. Genesis 37, I'll just hit a few high spots. Verse 4, it says, "And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all of his brothers, they hated him," they hated Joseph, "and could not speak peaceably unto him." So the family, the brothers. I mean, that brotherhood, it was filled with a lot of jealousy and envy. Well, Joseph had this dream, verse 5 says, and it goes through and describes the events of that dream. And verse 9, it says he dreamed another dream, and he told it to his brothers. And he talked about how great. Well, you can look into some of the details. His brothers didn't like it, let's just say that. Verse 15, and certain men found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field, and the man asked him, saying, what seek you? It says in verse 16, and he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray you, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them at Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer comes. Here comes Joseph the dreamer, the one that our father loves the most. Let's get rid of him right here, right now. Come now, therefore, verse 20, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say some evil beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. Well, Reuben came up with an alternative plan that wasn't quite as harsh, but he was the firstborn. He should have intervened. He should have come to Joseph's rescue. But he didn't do that. He didn't do it. And you know some of the history. Joseph ends up sold into slavery. They thought he was left for dead. And then Joseph winds up in Egypt. And his brothers were shocked to find him still alive many, many years later. But let's jump ahead to Genesis 49 and see what it says. This last day's prophecy. My father got into this last night at that campaign. But it says here in Genesis 49, verse 1, and Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. So this is for the end time. Here it is, the first book of the Bible. Here it is, Genesis, the book of origins, the first book. And we read about what's to come upon these sons of Jacob in the last days. Verse 2, it says, gather yourselves together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel, your father, Reuben, verse 3. He speaks to Reuben first. Reuben was the firstborn. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power, unstable as water. You shall not excel, because you went up to your father's bed, and then defiled you it. He went up to my couch. Almost exactly what it says in 1 Chronicles 5, as we just read. But here is Reuben, unstable as water, and yet having the excellency of greatness, but still a lot of instability there. Playing, as so many of our old articles, going back to the Plain Truth days, playing second fiddle to Germany in these last days. Listen to what Mr. Armstrong said. This is actually a coworker letter. He said back in 1980, it now looks entirely feasible that Yugoslavia may be included in this revived Roman Empire. Also, the Pope's native Poland and Romania and possibly Hungary. Add to Austria, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal, and France. So France is going to be a part of it. And as I said in the first segment, I mean, there's a history there going back thousands of years. There's a history going back over 1,000, certainly over the past 1,000, where France has had quite an involvement with the Holy Roman Empire. It says they'll be a part of this 10 nations, this new united Europe. Probably Holland and Denmark, Norway and Sweden will not be included in the final 10, that is. Britain will not. So how did Mr. Armstrong know that Britain would not be in it? but that France would be in it. It says, I've been forecasting this revived Roman Empire publicly since February 1934. Now it may go together suddenly and rapidly. I mean, you listen to the way that the French president is talking today. We need a real European army. We need protection from the United States. It's as if he already knows there's going to be a round three that pits Germany against the U.S. and Britain, just like World War II, just like World War I. History is going to repeat itself. Listen to this quote from 1966. This is the plain truth. Reuben's modern descendants will be at the side of the prophesied beast of Revelation when the Anglo-Saxons, the descendants of Joseph, are taken captive. That's the U.S. and Britain, prophesied to be taken captive by this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And it says there that Reuben is going to come on side with the beast. France, like its forefather Reuben, will probably seek a compromise to prevent its former allies, the very sons of Joseph, from being taken captive by the enemy. It says, during the last two world wars, France was at the side of her natural allies, the Anglo-Saxons. They are indeed her natural allies because the French people, in turn, are the modern descendants of Reuben. The situation, however, will be quite different during the next world war. France will no longer fight at the side of her foreign France will no longer fight at the side of her former allies. She will turn against them. The descendants of Reuben will play their part in selling into slavery their brother Joseph, just as Reuben did 3,700 years ago. That quote is from 1966. And it's some of this history, some of this writing, some of this teaching that my father summarized last night in Columbus, as he said there. I mean, I've been hearing this since I've been in the church, going on 50 years. We've been talking about Reuben betraying Joseph, Reuben betraying the nations of Ephraim and Manasseh. My father also alluded to that Daniel 8 prophecy, the strong man, in last night's personal appearance campaign in Columbus. Here's what he said, clip 9.
I think President Macron is maybe dreaming of, well, maybe I might even become the leader of this European power that's rising up. And it's already there. They know it's there. They just know they have too many nations and they're going to pare them down.
That's him last night in Columbus. There, the empire's there, and the leaders are jockeying for position, including President Macron. He's saying, look, we need a real European army. And they all understand. They also need a real nationalist leader, or at least a European leader. It'll turn out to be a German nationalist that imposes his will on the other 10. There is a nationalist coming out of the heart of Europe, and that's the one that these leaders in Europe should be concerned about. This new strong man. Here's what he said again, clip 10.
They're just waiting for the strong man. So you can naturally see, well, he has a lot of vanity, and he might be thinking about that, but there's no way he's going to be the leader of the Holy Roman Empire. He's going to be a part of it, though. That's where he's going to betray America and Britain.
Which is exactly what that article from 1966 pointed out. Just like it happened 3,700 years ago, he may have his sights set on that strongman position, but there's no way it's going to be him. He's going to be a part of it, though. How could we know so many specifics? How could Herbert Armstrong know so many specifics back in the 1960s? And it's all playing out. Britain wasn't even at the ceremony yesterday. Now, they did have their own pretty big ceremony in London. And I saw where the first time, I think it was, that a German president attended that ceremony, the London ceremony. But Britain's on the way out. Brexit. The American president, he's there for the ceremony, as he should be. And yet he's being slammed from the podium. 100 years on. And this is how the history is being told. Patan is someone that we want to lionize. We want to extol him. We want to laud his virtues. The Nazi collaborator. That was just last week. They're pushing forward. They see the nations coming together. They need the army. But there's a union there. There's a political union. It just needs the emperor. It just needs the strong man. And he's coming, as my father said last night. Here's clip 11.
There is this strong man that's ready to come on the scene. They're already pushing Angela Merkel out. And they could do it right away. And who is going to replace her? Every leader in Europe would like to do it.
See, you're only getting that message from God's church. Where else are you hearing this? Here is Germany today, the same Germany that forcefully marched its way across France in the early part of the 20th century and then did it again 20 years later. And here's Germany today. Its populace dissatisfied, wanting a strong leader. Its government in turmoil. And yet it's the unquestioned power in Europe. Economically, even with its political problems. Politically, it's the strong power. France is just going to be second fiddle to that. And really, I mean, you could say, well, do they forget this history from World War I? Do they forget this history from World War II? And it's not so much about that they've forgotten it. They know that in both those wars, it was Germany that came across their borders to overrun them. And this time, they're appeasing Germany ahead of time. They're setting out the terms of surrender in advance. They're saying the next round, if it comes, we're siding with Germany. It's the betrayal. Just as the church has been prophesying for decades, not unlike the betrayal of 3,700 years ago, selling off a brother into captivity, into slavery. And look at how fast these events are happening. My father made that point last night. When you look at how much is changing and how fast it's happening, in some cases, a matter of months. Listen to this clip, clip 6.
It wasn't but just a few months ago where Mr. Trump went to Paris and he was treated like the most royalty you'd ever have on this earth. And you'd think, man, we're really getting along well with him. That was just a few months ago. And now, look what he says. He says, here's what he said, that we've got to build up this military so we may have real military problems with China and Russia and the United States. Now, that shocked a lot of people, and it should. But there is that spirit in Europe. You have to face that.
There is that spirit, the spirit of Charlemagne. And they want the army, as he said last week. And then he comes to the ceremony yesterday and says, nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism. Mr. Trump is no patriot. He's no American patriot. Nationalism is a betrayal of that. Mr. Macron went on to say, by saying our interests come first and others don't matter, we are erasing what makes a nation precious. What makes it live, what makes it great, and most importantly of all, its moral values. We're erasing all of that. Donald Trump is erasing all of that by saying America comes first.
Doesn't this show just how out of touch these European, the current European leaders are with what's actually happening on the ground in France? in Germany, in Austria, in Hungary, and others as well. They get up behind the podium. They talk about the world. They talk about coming together. They assure us of peace. Even as there's this ever-growing number of people in their own nations who want the nationalist, who want the strong man. It's not about how much they despise Donald Trump, the American nationalist. The real story here is how much they want their own Donald Trump. Except a Donald Trump with a Germany first mentality. That's very much different than America first from 1916 or from 1940. There's a big difference. Even the history of the past 100 years shows us that. Well, he said yesterday, Mr. Macron did, that the world, it should come together. All nations should come together in these unified bodies. As I say, he's a devout globalist. He said this. This is one final clip from yesterday's ceremony, clip 12.
And on our continent, this is represented by the ties of friendship between Germany and France and the desire to build a bedrock of common goals. This hope is called the European Union, a union freely entered into, never before seen in history, a union that has freed us of our civil wars.
That's Emmanuel Macron through the translator. Yesterday, at the Centenary Memorial in Paris, talking about this pledge of harmony that we need to see in this world. And in Europe, you see it in this friendship between Germany and France, and in this European Union, this hope that is called the European Union, a union freely entered into, never before seen in history. Well, in history, there was never really the freedom to enter into it. Usually it was built by conquest. This time around, it is different. But Germany has fully emerged as the dominant power in that union. And the union's going to be shaken up in a moment, as my father went into last night. It's going to happen soon and quick, just as we're seeing. Not but a few months ago, you have Mr. Macron and President Trump arm in arm. Just the most affectionate visit. And now look at the events of this past week. But here he is talking about the need for an army and how wonderful the union, the European Union is, and how that union has freed us of our civil wars. Does he mean the one in the 1990s when Germany went right against the will of the Union and the will of the United States and the will of the United Nations to cause a brutal civil war in Yugoslavia? That's a bit of German nationalism. Germany first. This is what we want. We want to see that nation break apart. We're behind this. To the extent that the European continent has been free of more civil wars than usual, it's because of the American-led NATO alliance. Not because of the European Union, which, as Mr. Macron pointed out last week, doesn't yet have an army. But take away the American-led NATO umbrella and get leaders in there who are serious. They've talked about it for decades. We know this. But install leaders who are serious about a real European army. Downsize the project to just 10. 10 kings, 10 strong nations, 10 kings who are of one mind with the beast. 10 kings who rally around one man, one strong nationalist in thinking. And he has the whole of Europe in his hand, the power of a European army, a European military. And then, as the prophecies foretell, World War III is unleashed, particularly on our nations, Ephraim and Manasseh, the United States, and Britain. And we can be very thankful to God that when that happens, we'll be just a few years, 3.5 years away from the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.